football on off the ball.
We've all talked about it, you know, it's time for other people to step up, losing big characters as they were, and obviously the lads who have played a lot of games, they'll be missed obviously, but it's up to the rest of us to stand up, and I feel like in pre-season so far we have been.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
On episode 2 of Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors podcast, the stories behind the transfers that almost happened but just about didn't. Focuses on one of the greatest of all time, Pelé.
Pelé. Baba, back to Pelé. Now what's he going to do? He's got the third! Oh, beautiful goal!
And how the Santos superstar nearly swapped Brazil for Hanover. And how a Nazi ice machine salesman nearly pulled the deal off. Dropping in your OTB football podcast feed this Monday. Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors.
As we turn our attention to a different sport now with Keith Tracy and Barry Murphy. Good morning. Morning, both. How are you?
You well? Bad.
I say a different sport. The reason that the France-Ireland game was on last night, of course, the sort of wooden clash with the Winter Olympics opening ceremony here. I'm going to put this to you, lads, in your expert analysis here. This headline, penis injection claims in Winter Olympics ski jumping investigated by WADA. German newspaper claims acid injections used to alter jumpers' suits, writes Sean Ingle. Keith's thoughts?
Acid injections?
Yeah.
So does that mean they're injecting acid into their penis?
Great question. 0879 180 180. Let us know.
There's a load of different reasons to do stuff like that, but to throw yourself down a hill is I'm not sure.
Apparently
not
it makes sure. It last longer.
In the air.
Very good. That's what it says here too. Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on that and update you accordingly. Now, the League of Ireland's back.
It is.
Today. So 11 a.m. there's going to be a pitch inspection in Talla for the Shamrock Rovers Dundalk match. Now Keith Tracy is due to work on that game, and he's probably thinking, if that game is called off, I'm off the hook. But that's not the case, because if that game does fall foul of the weather, you're going up to Derry.
I am.
James McLean, right? So has he first of all filled the Damien Duff void and superstar persona with a lot to say for himself in the Premier Division?
Probably, but I have to be honest, I like it. I like that there's, you know, even if we get a bit of a dull game, James will come out and say something. Even when he set up the goal against Shamrock Rovers in the President's Cup, the first thing he does is stand with his arms out, giving it a bit to the Shamrock Rovers fans. I've absolutely no problem with James giving it all that. And I think it will add to the league like Damien Duff did. I think...
go ahead.
Over my face. I think it'd be absolutely gold dust, and I think he's obviously a wonderful player to have 103 caps for Ireland, to be a centurion. He's obviously a very, very good player, but I just think driving standards in that Derry dressing room will be a big thing. And I like Baz, last season I was thinking Michael Duffy's the only one you really worry about in that Derry dressing room as an attacking force. Now you're thinking they've got Darragh Markey, Josh Thomas, James McLean, they've got other dangers now. And I know it was only 3 points at the end of the season, but Shamrock Rovers, I think, lost 4 out of the last 5, and Derry won 4 out of the last 5. I think it's got closer, but I still have Shamrock Rovers as favourites.
Right. There's talk, Barry, of James McLean playing holding midfield.
Yeah, he played it the other day.
Yeah.
So he played with Winchester in the two, just in front of that back four. That's a change as well from Tiernan and Lynch. They were back three last year.
I'm wondering about that, right? It's like a Dwight York job. Do you remember when he moved back into midfield for Sunderland and Trinidad and Tobago in the World Cup? But with McLean, right, I wouldn't have thought that was the most obvious thing to do, because he's never been the most technical of footballers. I suppose you want someone to play a bit of ball there. But his level is like Championship at Wrexham recently, so you would imagine that he'd be at a superior level than most other players in the league. It's just an interesting move.
Yeah, he played 16 games in the championship as well. Like, yeah, he's not coming in as an unfit player, but he plays him, so he'd be interested. The other night as well, just his presence on the pitch, I think, you look at Duffy playing that left side, like, he was never going to play there. So it's all about trying to get him on the pitch as regularly as they can, and probably that's the position he can play. But in terms of him coming back into the team, he's going to have that kind of Suarez-type persona about him. I think you're going to love him in your team.
Mm.
Everyone else is going to hate him around the league, and that's brilliant for the league as well. But you probably won't see as much of him as Damien, because Damien's doing the pre-match conferences, the post-match conferences, stuff like that. So when he does come out, you'll have to pick and choose what he says when he comes out. But galvanising for a city and for a team as well, and could be the difference to get them over the line. Added in, I thought they had a great window anyway before they brought the two lads in, the two McLean brothers. Ollie Inke came in, great running power. Darren Markey's playing the right of a three now, excellent. Dos Santos has come in, a fella from Ottawa on the left hand side will be good, and Josh Thomas, Levin Clark, all great players. They've added 10 new players into that squad, so open heart surgery up there.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on McLean as a footballer now, away from
I don't see it being much of an issue, him dropping into holding midfield. I mean, I ended up doing that for totally different reasons. It wasn't old age, it was the fact that I put on a whole load of weight, so they were like, just throw Keith into defensive midfielder. I did it for Patson. I think if you're a technically gifted player, it's not, I wouldn't say easy, but James has been at a high level, and he can read the game really well, and a lot of defensive midfield stuff is just reading the game. Where do I need to be at certain times? And his distribution, it's not something you would highlight, but I think at League of Ireland level, his distribution would be brilliant.
Yeah, so I was going to say, like, I don't want to be disrespectful, because all jokes aside, I could understand you moving back in there, but it just wasn't as obvious to me with McLean. Like,
Yeah, but I think, like, once you see James in there, you think, tell you what, technically he's really good. And it's only like 10, 15 yard passes. I don't think he'd be getting in spraying 40 yard balls left, right and centre. It's just these little balls that'll break lines. And yeah, I think he'd be fine there. I think he's a technically gifted enough player to be able to be okay in there.
All right, so all going well, there's four games tonight. So there's the aforementioned Shamrock Rovers Dundalk one via pitch inspection, dependent on that. Then you have Galway United against Strathaty United, Derry, as we were saying, against Sligo Rovers, and then Waterford against Shell. So they all start at 7:45 tonight. And then we might move forward, lads, to the game on Sunday, because at the Aviva Stadium, of course, 2 o'clock, Bowls against Pats, two of your farmers there, Barry. First of all, right, you in favour of the whole Aviva thing, like, this second year in a row now? I don't think there's going to be as many people at it this year as there was last year.
They capped it, didn't they?
They capped, and I think there's a few Pats fans who were a bit negative towards the whole thing, because it's seen as a Bowls home game. Maybe they're not as willing to go to it. I don't know. Like, regardless of who shows up, it'll still be a higher attendance than would be if it was at the usual venue. Are you broadly, Barry, in favour of this as an opener for the season?
Massively in favour.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to get 20-odd thousand people there. I think you look at Derry Mount and you're looking at 4,000 or 4,500 people. Like, it's a massive boost in your revenue for first game of the season, and you can't turn away people. We can't afford as a league to turn away people, and this is a great opening game. It was brilliant last year. It was there, 30-odd thousand, whatever it was. The atmosphere around the place was absolutely brilliant, and for Bowes to see this as a commercial opportunity, but also giving up a home game as well. You're giving up that kind of atmosphere in Derrymount Park. They obviously see the benefits from it, but I don't see any negative to it. I think they've done things really well off the pitch, both to try and accommodate what they need to bring onto the pitch, and this is just another example of that, I think.
I think it's black and white. If you were a player and you said, do you want to play in front of 5,500 or do you want to play in front of 20,000?
It's class for it, yeah. Now, I was wondering, like, should it happen more, or is the season open enough and don't do it again kind of thing? Because then it's a novelty, isn't it? It's basically an ad for the league. Is that how you look at it?
If you did two more, you just worry about the numbers maybe drifting down a little bit, because 20,000 opening game of the season, there's that little bounce. The last thing you want is like 15,000, you know, 10,000 in your Aviva, because it would look pretty empty. But I'm in favour of it. I think it's brilliant. And if you're a player, you want to be playing in the Aviva. Those big pitches, big stands, loads of fans. It's exactly what you want.
Big fans, loads of stands. What about Stephen Kenny, right, for Pats? Because he was a lot of people's favourites to lead Pats to the league title last year, wasn't he?
Who was thinking that? Only somebody deluded would have been thinking that.
Well, they didn't get European football, right? So they finished fifth. Now, he was supposed to go on a winter holiday, Stephen Kenny. Did you hear this? But instead, he cancelled that and he went to spend time with Keith Andrews at Brentford and John Eustace at Derby. And I guess, I don't know the reason, but you probably guess why that he did that. But it feels like, I don't know, is this a huge season for Stephen Kenny particularly because of the reputation he comes into the league? It was almost like, was he taking a step down to return to the league? It was a long-term contract. there's a lot of talent in the squad. I know they've lost Mason Media, like that'll be a big thing to replace. But he held his end up the bargain. Media, he scored a lot of goals last year. Will they struggle this year? Do you expect them to do better? Are there lower expectations? I'm kind of fascinated by Pats.
I think it's a double-edged sword. You're looking at them and thinking they're not in Europe this season, which I think will play into their hands. Obviously, less games than the other bigger teams. And to be fair, I've been listening to Stephen Kenny over the last week or so, and he's saying the signings that Pats have made aren't really the signings that they generally do make. These are players like Nugent. Somebody will put his foot in. Somebody will do the dirty work and think, what if when they lose the ball? That's exactly what St. Pat's wants. Ronan Boyce is somebody who will get around and do things. Max Matte, on paper, I thought, is a brilliant, brilliant sign, and I think he's struggling with a bit of a knock. So it looks like Edmondson is going to be the one to lead the line for the first couple of weeks. On paper, yeah, Pats have got better again, but I remember at the start of the last season, I was looking at the signings they made and thought Pats would be right in the mixer. I worry about them in transition. I think they go all out when they're attacking. They commit too many bodies forward. But like I say, I do like Nugent. I think he will add that bit of steel, that bite and work rate that Pats need. And listening to Stephen Kenny, he's highlighting those things, that they're not the players we have signed. They're different technically, give Pats a little bit something different. So given the fact that he haven't got Europe, I think they have to get Europe this season because, what was that, the first time in 7 years Pats haven't been in Europe?
Man, and because at times, Barry, like, and I want to hear you being here too, and we'd be like celebrating the football that Pats are playing, but then they'd infuriate you if you were a fan of theirs, and they'd bemuse you objectively that sometimes they just wouldn't show up at all.
Yeah, I think they've gone under the radar a bit this window. I think.
It's weird, isn't it, that they have.
Like Derry, they're going to change system as well. I think they're going 3 at the back. They're going 3-5-2. And that's to assert more dominance and kind of counteract the way other teams have set up. Rovers are sticklers for a 3-5-2, whatever way you want to look at it. And the signings they've made kind of buy into that as well. When you look at Nugent, we'll sit there with Jamie Lennon at the back. That's the legs that Keith was talking about there, the kind of defensive unit. You look at the lads coming back into the team, though, Elbazetti, Ramal Farmer, who missed half the season last year, if not more. They're like new signings coming back in. Aidan Keenan will be there off Max Madden when he's there. Chris Forrester, how'd you get him into your team? But I just think, you look at last season, they had the best defence in the league, 18 clean sheets, that's 50% of games they kept a clean sheet in. It's an unbelievable base to start from. So if you can add those goals into the team, I think they're an outside bet.
Really?
Yeah, I think they've just gone under the radar. The way that Europe falls, the amount of fixtures around those European games, Pats can get a head of steam up going into those games. I think they've got a great chance of being up in and around.
Just to follow on from that story I was telling you, that he went to see Keith Andrews at Brentford and Eustace at Derby. Stephen Kenny was saying, just to make sure we improve all aspects of what we do, to make sure we can do the most with the constraints that we have. That was the reason he did that, to cancel the holiday and do that. So it was an element of underperformance to it.
Like, they've moved out to the Abbottstown as well. They're out with the FAI centre out there, so they've got the best of everything. So in terms of that, they've boxed it off completely in terms of professionalism.
So we're expecting Pats to employ long throws this season?
You could see them looking Brentford light.
Why not? Yeah. I like that from Stephen, though. Always learning. He's obviously a really good CV, being the Ireland manager. But
there's a humility to what
Still learning. I'm still trying to uncover things. I like that.
What about Bowes, right? So remember, they were linked there with Dele Alli a few weeks ago. We all got very excited or kind of amused. What's going on here? But the man to look out for, the young boy, I should say, the 16-year-old Hugh Martin. This could be very exciting, the next Melia.
Yeah, I was listening to Rennie speak about him as well. And from what I've taken away from what Rennie is saying, it looks like he might start in the Aviva on Sunday, which would be brilliant. Mm-hmm. Another young lad coming into the league with all sorts of potential. But to be honest with you, I haven't seen an awful lot of them live, so I have to reserve judgment until I do. But brilliant that we have these young lads in the league. And I know we'll move on to Shamrock Rovers, but even Michael Noonan, and people are tipping him to be top goal scorer this season. It's a really, really exciting league, and I'm absolutely buzzing for it. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, what about Buzz?
I just don't see where the goals come from for them. That's their signings they've made. Diallo, Todd, Harry Vaughan's a great little player as well coming into the team, but I just don't see a consistency of goals in that team. It hasn't been there in the last couple of years. When you had the Georgie Kellys, the Omachers, the Offalabis, there's nobody there that kind of screams that they're going to score 10, 12 goals this year.
The Moose last season.
The Moose. Yeah. Oh, that was the only excitement around the Aviva with the Moose. Shamrock Rovers, right? So you touched them there at the start, Barry. They're your favourites, right? Are they? To retain?
Yeah, they are. I think I think the gap is, as Keith said, bigger. The way that the end of the season finished last year, Rovers lost 4-5. The gap should have been way bigger. you just look at Derry's opening games. They've got four home games to start the season off. Sligo, Dundalk, Bowes and Waterford. That's a great start. For them, they need to build up a head of steam, but I just can't see, you can't look past Rovers, what they have in that dressing room. I still think they need a centre forward. They're going to sign Naj Razi today. He's going to get over the line today as a left winger. They were in for Jarvis, obviously didn't get him. There was talk around Dyke Steele that was at Cork as well on that left hand side, so they were looking to still strengthen. I still think they're short of centre forward at the moment. Just I'm not sure about McGovern, just haven't seen him a little bit last season and seen him in the President's Cup. I think he's willing, just I don't know if the actual know-how or the nous about in around the boxes there,
John McGovern,
that he needs. Listen, he looks like a proper unit, a proper player. Just can he add goals to the game that the likes of Gaffney give you? And if you're looking at him, he's out this evening. Is he going to be in and out of the team again? We probably said this last year and he was phenomenal, but I can't look past him. I think they've added good quality. Mulroney's going to play in there. He looks to be more of a central role for them. And you just look at the midfielders around the league altogether. I don't think I've ever seen a depth of quality around the midfielders.
Ball-playing midfielders.
Look everywhere. Pats, Rovers, Derry, the midfields are incredible this season, so that's where it's going to be won and lost, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a huge coup, I suppose, that they managed to keep hold of Michael Noonan. Like, so, like, I thought, you know, I think we all did, going to Bundesliga side Hoffenheim. They're third in the league for €2 million, but he's sticking around, and then they've added that wealth of experience and quality with Enda Stevens as well. Well, that'll be really interesting. Yeah, it's slightly under the radar. Now, would he play, do you think, the left side of a back three? I mean, particularly when Pico Lopez goes to the World Cup, right? Yeah. What would they do with Stevens? Will they play him fullback or as part of central defence? This is kind of the James McLean thing, isn't it? Like, you put these guys centrally as much as possible.
More of an influence. I think it's up to Enda. I think it depends what he has in his legs. If he feels like he can bomb up and down as a left wing back, then by all means, he can play out there. But like you said, when Pico goes to the World Cup, he might move as a left-sided centre-half, which is absolutely no problem. I think Jack Bourne as well, coming back to Shamrock Rovers.
Right.
Yeah, I think he'll have a little bit to say about it all.
What's their relationship going to be like, though, I suppose? I mean, if he's coming back, that's a good sign, first of all, that he's because he could have been gone entirely. Like, I thought we may have seen the last of Jack Bourne in the League of Ireland, that it was always going to be the thing. Well, on his day, he was the best player in the league, but on his day, it was fleeting.
Yeah, if you're Stephen Bradley, if you're going to allow Jack to come back, then he comes back. There's no point coming back and still having a hover over his head and thinking, yeah, he's back, but I'm not playing him. I'm still falling out with him. I'm still not his mate. If you're letting him back, you've got to have a clean slate. He's gone to Dubai. He's done his thing. I'm sure he's apologised, if not to the players, then to Stephen Bradley's face. And I'm sure Jack is thinking, I've heard the reports that he's looking really, really fit. He's had a very good off season. So Jack is still one of the most technically gifted players in the league. And if people are, I wouldn't say writing him off, but if people aren't talking about him, that's a great place to be at the start of the season. Thinking, okay, I'll show you all exactly what I still have in my locker. And I think he will pop up with some big, big moments for Shamrock Rovers.
Because you have Adam Brennan as well and Kovalevskis.
Yeah,
this and Adam Ole or Victor Ole, I should say.
Yeah.
So and like at a start, like you say, Jack Burns coming back. They've added Enda Stevens to it. Now they have lost players too. Like Josh Honan's a big loss.
Yeah. It's a massive loss.
So are they on paper stronger?
I think they've covered up the cracks probably better. When you look at Pico going to the World Cup, I think Matthews will go back in there as a centre half. He did during the season this year. But just look at that midfield. Watts, Burke, Byrne, Healy, Mulroney, Malley as well. Conor Malley signed from Sligo on a permanent deal as well. So there is quality there. And I think probably for Jack as well. I think part of the process of coming back in was probably an acknowledgement. Listen, if you're out of the team, you're out of the team. It's because I'm picking a team to win a certain game. So I think Jack is so good that he wants to play every game. And you want to do that as a footballer as well. But you look at the quality around him that could come in. So there probably is an acknowledgement that he mightn't play every game. But when he does, certainly influenced him because he did look sharp in that President's Cup game the other night.
Sorry, Cullum, looking at Pat's start of last season, it was a really slow start and he struggled to get points on the board early doors. Their first game is obviously away to Bowes in the Aviva. Then their second away game is Shamrock Rovers away. Their third away game is Shelbourne away. So they've got three Dublin derbies that are away from home in the first five games. They can't lose all three of them. They've got to put a marker down and think, we can go and beat Shamrock Rovers and Tallaght. We can go and beat Bowes and the Aviva. They need to do that. They need a quick start from me, Pats, because it's like we always get to the last month, maybe month and a half, and think, tell you what, Pats are gathering a bit of speed.
Yeah.
And it's too late.
Do they need to learn how not to lose a game, if that makes sense?
Yeah.
Rather than play a bit of ball all the time.
It's one of those basic things that you always say about Shamrock Rovers. Oh, they've turned up, they're a 6 out of 10, but they don't lose.
That's the thing.
It's a mark of champions. And people say, oh, they didn't lose. That's brilliant. Pats will lose those games, those 50-50, 60-40s, they'll draw or lose, and they just need to turn draws into wins and losses into draws. Very simplistic stuff, but like Baz says, their clean sheets are absolutely fine. Mm. It's just the other little technical side of things, and transition for me is still a big thing with St. Pat's.
That's for Pats, yeah. Just one last one on Rovers, right? Like Ronan Finn's gone in there, isn't he? And he's the director of football. Mm-hmm. It's like the quality personnel there. Sorry. But for Bradley, it's 5 Premier Division titles in 6 years, right? Now, winning is a habit, they say, so it's a great thing. But motivation is a difficult thing to continue. And I always have that question next. Every time I'm writing notes to Stephen Bradley, I'm always like, why? For Stephen Bradley, why does he keep going? Like, has he no more mountains to conquer here, especially with the cup win as well? Like, he ticked that off. What's his motivation here?
His motivation is moving forward.
Moving forward how? Like, just win it better?
Just winning. Just keep winning. It's, you know, winning becomes a habit, and the more you win, the more you want to keep winning. And I'm sure even people saying, oh, Derry are looking good this season, or Pats might be in and amongst it. Stephen Bradley be thinking, okay, we won by 3 points last season, let's win by 6 points this season, let's still do the whole European thing. And it's getting harder every year, because I do feel the rest of the league is getting stronger and starting to catch up all the time. And you look, just everybody is capable of beating everybody there. Shamrock Rovers are very capable of having an off day with European stuff as well. They could become stretched, and with Pico going to the World Cup, there is little things there you think Shamrock Rovers could have a dodgy period here, but somebody needs to be able to take advantage of it. Mm. Bowes couldn't do it last season, Derry couldn't do it, Pats couldn't do it. So when Rovers have that wobble, somebody's got to grab the league by the scruff of the neck and get themselves out ahead. And I don't know, I still see Shamrock Rovers as a little bit above everybody else, and Derry and Pats are scrapping around thinking who's going to be second.
Yeah, like, so yeah, if Pats and Derry are chasing, Rovers winning, are Derry your favourites for the closest challengers, Barry? Like, this is a year of difference for Derry, right? We talked about McLean. They have the money there now of Philip Bodaherty, don't they? Backing him. So they have a new stand, and they'll have a new pitch in the summer. So they'll be moving away to Celtic Park. But incidentally, Galway are going to Pearse Stadium as well at one point during the season as well, because Eamon DC Park's being renovated. So, like, overall, that's a great move for the League of Ireland that these facilities are finally being upgraded. But for Derry, geez, we've talked about them as the bridesmaids for a good few years, haven't we? We just never really believed that they're going to get married, so to speak.
I think they've bottled it over the last couple of years.
Would you say bottle is fair?
100% they have. It was there for
the Shells year particularly.
Shells year in particular. And Rovers haven't been at it. If they were like any sort of form during the season and consistency, they would have been right there. And I know they were 3 off, but again, you look at those last 4 games. But like, if there was pressure on them then to go and do it, and they haven't done it, the pressure is 10 times that now. I looked at their kind of pre-season kind of press conference. It was in, I think it was a cinema or some sort of gallery, but there's 250 people at it. Philip O'Doherty's talking about having the blinkers on, about winning the league this year and winning the next season, and the money they've put into it. There's serious pressure going on that team now, that it's been there before, but nothing like it is now. And it's one thing to have it on you, but Rovers have had it on for years. They know how to deal with it. They know how to deal with it as a staff. It's new players coming into the team. The only thing is, I do think somebody like McLean can galvanise a dressing room like that, and that's the difference. But there's massive pressure up there.
Well, I'm not sure what's more important to Derry. Do they want to get to the league phase of one of the European, or do they want to win the league? I think it's $125,000 for winning the league. I mean, it's a much more financially.
I think he wants the league. I think he's got so much money behind him, and he's stepped away from his role now with his company, that he's gone full time as chairman. I think for him, it's all about winning the league now. I don't think he cares about the European money. I think it's pittance to him.
Mm. And what about Dundalk? Mm. Jesus, like, it was only around that time that Derry lost the league to Shells that Dundalk looked like they were going out of existence. Yeah. Like, this is the end of 2024 we're talking about. But nowadays, with Chris Clinton, Kieran Kilduff there, brought them back up, and looked like Kilduff was going to leave the job. Got back in, stayed there. What are their expectations this year, Dundalk?
It has to be to just stay in the league.
And do you think that they will? That's the big one, I think, about who's going down this year.
That are in the same boat. I think Waterford will flirt with it. I think Sligo will flirt with it. I think Galway have obviously lost Moses Dyer last season, Bobby Burns, Borden, Patrick Hickey, Brendan Clark, Greg Cunningham. There's an awful lot of experience and talent gone out of that Galway dressing room. And I look at them and think they're going to struggle for goals. I really like Walsh up front. I think he puts himself about, but he hasn't got that, I'll get you 15 goals a season. He'll probably, you know, get between five and ten, which in a team who's going to flirt with relegation, you probably need that bit more. But from Dundalk, I like the signing of Rob Cornwall. I think Keith Buckley as well. Again, he probably won't play every game, but standards in the dressing room, knowing what to expect from away games. And Bobby Burns was at Galway last season. I did me my coaching badge and my B badge with him up the north in Belfast, and he's a very, very impressive young man to be doing coaching badges at his age. And I just looked at him and thought, Bobby, you are the complete opposite of what I was as a player. I didn't want to be anywhere near coaching stuff. I thought, well, I'll be a player for the rest of my life and I'll make enough money and I'll go off into the sunset. Bobby is already putting things in place for after football, which absolutely blows my mind. So impressive young signings, but they'll be tight. And I think even now, if you offered Dundalk ninth to go into a playoff, relegation playoff, they'd probably take it, yeah.
If they're getting ninth, who's tenth?
Oh, Galway.
I worry about Galway.
Yeah, I do worry about Galway.
It's going very well under John Caulfield for a while. Mm-hmm. Even the start of last year, they started slowly, and but 2024, there was something about them then, but I don't know what the momentum gone from that or what.
No. And
Moses Dyer was huge.
He was massive, the goals he brought. They brought in a lad from a Canadian fella, I think Shacklow, the centre forward, Bulger, Lamboto, Matty Wolf kind of cast off some Sligo, not to be disparaging about it.
Hickey's a big one as well, isn't he?
Yeah, it's like he's gone to play centre half at both, by looks of things. I just think that the signings there, it just doesn't inspire you. But did anyone know Moses Dyer before last season? Probably not. And John has a way of uncovering these players. And Dundalk as well, I think they've signed reasonably well for coming back up. Got Conor Kearns in goal. Mm. Like, he's been around the league a long time, a league winner. Danny Mullen up top, you'd think there'd be goals in him. I just don't see a lot of running power in that team. That's the only thing. And you're playing on that Astro. Can you get Rob Cornwall and Buckley in your team? They've been prolific injuries the last couple of seasons. You can be playing on Astro every week. Is that going to help? Probably not. But just the running power, I don't really see it there at Dundalk. So can teams run over them? Can they? If they cope with that, I think they'll be okay. But again, Sligo as well, lost a lot of players. Yeah. Elding, Jake Doyle Hayes, Hutchinson, we recruited reasonably well. And John has kind of found this niche up in Sligo as well that he can take players and make them better. Send them back to their teams. That's what he's done. He's done really well the last couple of seasons, and they've kind of done well off it.
Park Hammond staying in Waterford will be huge too. 37 years old, but still prolific. So right, if we're talking about Waterford, Galway, Sligo, and Dundalk struggling, and we're talking about league title contenders alongside Shamrock Rovers as Derry, Pats, and Shells, and Bowes. When we talk about Shells, that leaves one other team, Drogheda. So where are Drogheda?
It's strange, isn't it? I don't know where to place them. Looking at them, I'd be thinking they'll probably end up in a relegation battle again, but I'm in this sort of weird place with Drogheda now where I'm starting to expect miracles every single year from them.
Is that a compliment to
them? That's a compliment. Yeah. Like, I'm starting to think they'll be okay. One reason or another, they'll be okay. But on paper, I'm looking at them. They've signed Brandon Cavanagh, who's a brilliant little player, but they've lost an awful lot of players. And yeah, I think there's just this nagging feeling in the back of my head that I keep thinking they're going to be all right, but I also think it could easily fall into a relegation battle and not being a really good season. But Kevin Doherty's been amazing there, so I will back him again to be amazing. And the things he's done last season, like coming out of Europe, getting into Europe, winning the FEI Cup, getting knocked out of Europe because of what's happening off the field issues, that dressing room just kept going and going and going. And I said it last season, I'm in awe of them again, and I expect them to be out of it, but wouldn't be surprised if you were right in the middle of it.
Alright, prediction time. This is what we'll keep, restore and clip and play it back to you repeatedly. Top three.
Here's the stick to beat as well.
Go ahead, Keith.
Top three, Shamrock Rovers as the winners, Derry second, and I'm going to go St. Pat's third with no European football just creeping in there.
I'm going Rovers, Shells, Derry.
Shells?
Yeah, I think that's a massive signing yesterday for him in Jarvis. I think there was so many people in for him as well, and they probably didn't score enough goals last year, but look at what they brought in. Lundgren on the left-hand side, Oran Casey. Freitas is an unknown kind of quantity up front, a striker. Did you play with Vastay at Blackburn? Do you know him? He was his agent. Yeah, Joey's talking about it now. They have that Jamestown model now in recruiting players, but I think he knew this fella, knew Vaz Tay, and he said this Freitas fella's a decent fellow up front, so they've signed well there. And you just look again at their midfield, Jack Henry, Francis, McInerney, Lunny, Wood, Coote, brilliant players all around, and I think they're going to be thereabouts.
Okay, so if everything goes well with this pitch inspection, we will have live commentary of Shamrock Rovers versus Dundalk tonight. Talk Premier League. Bobby Dwyer there in the midst of the rugby conversation this morning was like, where's Premier League chat? Where is it? Because Manchester United are playing his beloved Tottenham Hotspur tomorrow, 12:30. Tonight is Leeds against Forest. It is the Michael Carrick derby tomorrow, United Spurs. How about it, Keith, right? You play the lads in their chosen natural positions. Mm. Take the shackles off, be a bit calm, wear a cool coat on the sideline, and then suddenly everything's looking well.
Yeah, it's basics, isn't it? Put people in their best positions, motivate them to run around. I think what we've seen from Manchester United in the last three games has been brilliant. The Manchester City result, obviously, the Arsenal result, really, really good.
Yeah.
The Fulham one, a lot of people were saying that's the real force test. I know Fulham aren't as good as Manchester City and Arsenal on paper, but you know, if you're a professional footballer, they're the games you get up for, the Cities and the Arsenals of this world. But you're thinking, what are you going to do about against Fulham? They go 2-0 up and you're thinking, I tell you what, Michael Carrick's getting the tune nowadays, and then all of a sudden it's 2-2 and they go and nick it in the last minute. So I think I'm still reserving judgment. People are saying, oh, Carrick looks brilliant. I've heard some United fans saying, just give him a contract now. I think that's Ollie at the wheel stuff again. Like, that's mental stuff.
Is that the only reason not to?
Well, no, he has no he's managed Middlesbrough. People, a couple of weeks ago on here, somebody said to me, should Sean Dyche ever get a top six job? And obviously me being Sean Dyche, mate, I went, yeah, of course he should. Liam Rossignol doesn't deserve a top six job. Michael Carrick doesn't deserve a top six job. Sean Dyche does.
Can I be mildly facetious here? What about Vincent Kompany going from Burnley to Bayern?
Well, that was shocking. I think he'd done that to suit himself, and he threw the dressing room under the bus thinking, I'll keep playing the same way because I might get a better move at the end of it. Even though we're losing, even though we're going to get relegated, I'm going to play this way, and then he's off to Bayern.
Yeah, I suppose from Middlesbrough to Man United, Burnley to Bayern, it's a hell of a
manager who wants to stay in the league and thinking, no, this means everything to me. Would have changed that dressing room, would have changed tack, would have done something else. But I think he knew in the background thinking, well, it's more about my style of play than my results, which is absolutely crazy. For me, it's all about winning games of football. I don't care how you do it. But yeah, now Vincent Kompany didn't deserve that, but since he's gone in there, he's been brilliant.
Hang tight at the moment as well, United. Enjoy what's happening right now. Make a decision at the end of the season. Would that be you?
Yeah, to take it week by week at the moment. Enjoy what's there. It's been so bad for the last couple of years, but you come to the end of the season, I said it before, I think you go and get Unai Emery. I think he's the man. He's perfect for that club. I think you've got to give him the keys to the club, though.
Right.
That's the thing. You look at Aston Villa, the structures they have. He's only answerable to the owners. He's got Vida Gani in as his director of football on one side, looking after the kind of off the field stuff, and then you've got another fella in that's doing the transfers and recruitment, all on the say so of Unai Emery. But you just look at what he does, his body of work. He's done it in the Champions League. He's doing it in the Premier League. I think if you're Jim Ratcliffe, you say, right, listen, the director of football's out the door, see you later, Wilcox, I'm bringing in Emery and his team, bring them as a package, and then you're answerable to the owner as a package then as well. I think that's probably something that's happening too much now, is that there's a diluting of the kind of answer or the accountability of a director of football.
Yeah.
I think when you bring somebody like Emery and his team in, you come in as a package and you leave as a package.
We have a furious Tottenham Hotspur supporter working with us this morning, Eve Conway.
Really?
Get rid of Thomas Frank. Now, what do these Spurs fans want?
I'm not sure. where did he finish? Fourth in the Champions League? So I understand that they're looking at the Premier League and thinking, that's not good enough. But when you look at the Champions League, you think, well, there is something there. They just need to be able to get that from the Champions League and bring it into the Premier League.
Is there no jeopardy in the Champions League? Would that be the only thing you'd say there? Because the top 24 will get you something.
Yeah, but they finished ahead of Barcelona, finished ahead of Manchester City. They finished ahead of some really, really good teams in the Champions League. So I understand that the Spurs fans are thinking, well, our levels in the Champions League are a lot better than the levels in the Premier League. I don't know whether the Premier League's maybe just a little bit stronger than the Champions League league phase at the minute, but I still maintain, if you give Thomas Frank enough time, and look at the players that haven't played for Spurs this season, Madison hasn't kicked the ball, Kulusevski hasn't kicked the ball. Some of the tactical stuff is crazy at times. They kept playing through the middle of the park, yet they don't have any technicians in there. They had Basuma and I can't remember the other lads that were in there, but I was doing commentary thinking, Sarr, Papa Sarr, they have some decent little attributes.
Ben Tankar's a good player, yeah.
Yeah, but he wasn't playing. If you have Madison Kulusevski in there, Bentancur, by all means, give them the ball, play Bergwell, through the middle.
Yeah.
But if you don't, you've got a bypass. And look, I think Thomas Frank, once he gets his full selection of players, he will get a tune out of them. But Romero keeps coming out and saying mad stuff left, right and centre. He needs a good slap on the wrist, that fella. He's a bit mental. And when you have your captain coming out saying sort of stuff like that, he just needs a slap on the wrist.
Is this just strong pressure on the manager?
Isn't
stuff
he
like
all
that?
The time?
If you lose that mental side of him, you don't get the good side of him.
Yeah. Before he played United in the European final,
yeah,
he came out and said, oh, I want to play in Spain. You're thinking, you've got a final next week, you lunatic. And he's coming out
and
saying,
he meant the final in Spain.
Well, I think he said he wanted to play in Spain, which By all means, yeah, if you want to play in Spain, great, but you don't say that a week before a final.
Yeah,
he's capable of change though, Thomas Frank. He changed around. I think he went 3 at the back today against City and pulled it back to 2-2.
That was mad, that game, wasn't it? The first half was like they were obliterated.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have live commentary on Sunday, the Premier League, the M23 Derby. Had to look that up to get the motorway correct. It's Brighton against Crystal Palace with Phil Egan and Vinnie Perth at 2 o'clock and then at 4:30. This was once upon a time massive. Not as big this season. Liverpool against Manchester City with Stephen Doyle and Graham Gartland. But you know, Liverpool's doing, I suppose. And the fact that City, it's not vintage City. This is kind of B-class version of a great game. Liverpool City. Or could it be great?
I think it'd be a good game. I think for Arsenal fans it'd be a great game. I'd be sitting there watching it. There was something about it. Like, you look at this Manchester City going to Anfield. I think Liverpool will do Manchester City. The more I look at them, I think top end of the park, they look really, really good. Pep is coming out and giving out about Mark Gahey not being allowed to play in the final because he didn't play in the first leg of the semi-final. Yeah. I know Semenya was in the same boat, but for some reason Semenya was allowed to play. I don't understand the rules, but the fact that Pep is highlighting, think we need Gahey as a centre-half, we do, because
they didn't sign him for the first leg of the semi-final. Mm. So that's why Semenya was allowed to play.
Semenya was signed for the first leg,
before the first leg,
Yeah, well, look, the fact that he's highlighting that tells you he's not happy with his defence either. Yeah. They've got Nico Reilly playing left back, which isn't really a left back. He'll do a job there, but he's better on the ball than he is defensively. Mateus Nunes, right back, can be done. Cushing off centre half, still learning the game. I don't like Manchester City's back line. With Gahey there, it's a lot stronger, but without Gahey, they will struggle, and I think Liverpool will do them, and Arsenal fans will be over the moon.
I'll see you later, Keith Tracy. Have
Cheers.
A good one.
See you later, lads.
Keith Friday's coming straight in now. There's not even time today. Straight in. Morning, how are you?
Morning, lads.
Are you well?
Yeah, great. Top of the world.
Quick fire hit. There's a big feedback to do more of this, do it longer, but here we are. Which of your managers was the best footballer in training? This is off the back of Liam Rossini's horrendous touch on the sideline.
That was a shocking touch, wasn't it? Yeah. He'd be better off just volleying that. to be fair, there's two answers to this. Mark Hughes was unbelievable, but that was more shooting sessions he would join in, the crossing volleys. And finishing. Volleys, unbelievable. But from open play, Paul Ince used to join in the five-a-sides on a Friday.
Has a bit.
Had a bit, but like crunching into tackles. And it was always Morten Gams-Pedersen. I don't know whether he was trying to toughen him up or what he was trying to do, but me as the number two left winger, I was thinking, go on, Gaffer, go on. But yeah, no, brilliant. You could tell he still had a bit, and what a player he must have been in his prime.
Eddie Howe, Potter?
No. He joined in once or twice and, you know, just looked a little bit awkward. He'd come into boxes and just didn't move like a footballer, but... Yeah, obviously a brilliant coach, brilliant manager, but not the best footballer in the world.
Pat Nevin was on the show this week talking about how English football is really bad at producing number 10s. They can't play, they can't find the natural position. Did you find that as a player, and do you find that as a pundit?
No, I slightly disagree with Pat, to be honest with you. When you look at the English number 10s, I mean, Jude Bellingham is playing for Real Madrid, one of the best teams in the world in the number 10. Phil Foden, I think, did Pat say they're positionally they don't really know where to stand when they're in the number 10?
Yeah, they actually stand in the 10 position, which is bad because you get picked up.
Yeah, well, you've got to end up there rather than standing in there.
Ozzy Ardita's taught him to end up there, yeah.
Yeah, you have to end up there. It's a timing issue. But when you look at Phil Foden can play left wing, right wing, in the 10. So he's not tactically stupid. He knows where to be. Yeah. Cole Palmer, he's only 23. So his ceiling is still very, very high. He's got another 4 or 5 years before he reaches his peak. Abrigi Eze is one that could play left, right, in the middle. Morgan Rogers, Madison, Gibbs-White. There's an awful lot of really good British number 10s. And I would, you know, I don't think Wayne Rooney is the best number 10 ever, but I think he's in the mixer in the argument. So I think British number 10s are really, really good. But yeah, I don't quite agree with Pat, but the best number 10 of all time.
Yeah.
Mr. Bergkamp. No.
Which is a nice segue into Arsenal, which we're going to have to do next week. Why is there no love for Arsenal? There's a big, big question in that from Roy Larmour.
I've got
right?
about 3 pages yeah. of this
we
stuff.
We will do it properly because time is of the essence.
Should be love for Arsenal.
This is very quick for both of you. The Winter Olympics starting today. This is sent in to us. What winter sport would you be best at?
Well, I'm not throwing myself down that hill anyway.
Do you have to do any injections?
You know, what's the one where they let the thing go and the last to be sweeping the ice?
Huh?
Curling.
Yeah,
I think I'd like to do the curling. I think I'd have a bit about me in that.
Yeah.
Oh, why?
I just think I have the finesse and the technique to just...
Do you be furiously like sweeping floors at home? Like, can you tell?
No, I looked at it and think, I reckon I could do that.
Bobsled?
Yeah, went Pofstein years ago on a stag. 5 hours to get there. Went down to bobsled in it. I had a big mate. Yeah, 20 stoners sitting at the back of the bus. I think we broke Olympic records going down the thing. But
Jamaica, we got a bobsled team.
Oh my God.
Did you ever go skiing?
Skiing? No, footballers aren't allowed.
Which are not a footballer now?
Yeah, well, I don't have the money to go now because I don't play football.
We'll do a GoFundMe, will you? Yeah. Get kids skiing there. You could be class, you never know. Imagine could you were be. Unreal. Do you ever think sometimes you could be class at something?
Yeah, and you've
never tried,
yeah.
never tried it. You never tried it.
Well, you texted me the other day thinking you could have been a world class cook.
That's
if you
right.
Put your heart into it.
I just didn't have it. Yeah.
6 month cooking course behind me. I've got
that's
a
right.
Bit.
We could have a cook off.
Ooh, I like that.
We could have a cook off. We do have a send off today.
We do.
Yeah. No birthdays, nothing. But I want to dedicate the last few seconds of this show to the one and only Jojo. So you've heard us mention Jojo many, many times over here. Now, don't worry, he's not going anywhere. He's going on a loan move to Portugal and Brazil for 6 months. It's a career break, a bit like what Owen Shane did a few years ago. And he came back better than ever. So Jojo has promised that he's coming back to us in August. But for the next 6 months, Jojo will be away visiting family, taking a well-deserved break. Jojo is the man who runs the show behind the scenes. So everything that you hear and everything that you see, you can either blame him or you congratulate him for it. But it's not as seamless to do as it looks to you, the viewer and the listener. And that's all thanks to Jojo. We love him. We wish him very well. We hope he has a great time. And we welcome him back because we'll need him back.
Put you in a good mood in the morning, Jojo, don't you? When you say good morning to Jojo.
He is the ultimate hype man. Yeah. He's the most outgoing, eccentric, extroverted person who does not want to be on camera, who will absolutely refuse to go on camera, will not do it. But anyone that meets Jojo is better for it, so we'll miss him very much. And on that note, have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you on Monday. All the best.
Off the Ball Breakfast,
Ireland's sports breakfast show.